Hey, welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buholtz, and today you may know him from his paleo art, his work on realistic Pokemon. You may know him as Arvelous. We've got RJ Palmer in. Welcome.
Yes, hello, it's me. I draw monsters.
You draw monsters so well, though.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the feedback.
That's what we're here for. This isn't a podcast so much as an intervention on your artistic talent.
Oh, yeah. So I got to go back to drawing people now is what you're saying?
Yeah. I just really want to see monster people.
Okay. Yeah. I'll make it happen.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah. it's the natural evolution from Jurassic Park to Jurassic World to now Jurassic Universe.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for like when the scalies start like meeting with each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the content that we really need in America right now.
I could see it. So we've had you in all week, and now we get to sit down and talk to you, get to meet the real you that all of us in the office have seen all week, but we got to share that with everyone else.
Cool.
So let's hear a little bit about you to start.
Sure. Obviously we've established what my name is, but I draw monsters, and I've been drawing monsters for like my entire career. When I was a kid, like all I wanted to draw was like dinosaurs because I grew up in the early 90s, and Jurassic Park was a thing, and like dinosaurs were just everywhere. So that like really made an impact on me. And then Pokemon came out when I was like 8 or 9, and I love monsters now. In my early 20s, I was like sort of fell ass backwards into doing more monsters, and people really liked them. And I did these realistic Pokemon things, which I don't know if we'll get into later, but some people have probably seen somewhere. And that basically made my entire career.
There we go. From drawing dinosaurs to doing everything.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a. Monsters are a little bit more complicated than people because you kind of have to know how to draw all the animals to do a good one. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah. Even in the, like, you did a Rathalos piece from Monster Hunter recently. Sure. Like, and you can see a bunch of influences from different creatures within that, even though, like, the model is made, but you bring in extra layers of anatomy to that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I love doing fan art, but I don't think fan art has much worth unless you're sort of like bringing some of yourself to it. Like, it's, you know, everybody can just like draw like, hey, this is the character, this is the model sheet, I'm going to try and copy that, right? But then for like me, what's interesting is like trying to learn something from it, because for me doing fan art is like, it is a learning exercise because it's something that somebody else has designed, and obviously it appeals to a lot of people, it appeals to me. So I'm gonna try and break down why that is and then bring some of my own influences into it and like make it sort of like my own version.
You do it really well. Like if I was to try and draw a Rathalos, it would look very much like any other fan art of anything.
Yeah.
Like, you might not be able to tell. Yeah. Like, is that a T-Rex? Is that a Rathalos? It's got wings.
Yeah. No, and it's especially with a design like that, it's, like, so intricate that, you know, breaking down each of the component elements and, like, finding a real-world analog for, like, my own sake was, like, a really complicated and fun part of the process.
Yeah, what were some of the ones you found?
Horny toads, or horned lizards, I think is the more official name.
Squirt like, blood from their eyes.
Yes, they do. They're, like, these little spiky lizards live all over like you know the Southwest, but they have like these really really cool like thorny forms all over them, and Rathalos is spiky, so I thought you know maybe I should do that.
Yeah
so like I love bringing horny toads and just basically like mashed a bunch of horny toads into like an eagle, and that's where we ended up.
Has science gone too far?
Yeah.
No, it looks great though, and I love how much went into that piece too, because you can really feel your love for that series and that sort of design throughout that piece. Like that is a like, pun intended, I guess, monstrous piece. Yeah. Like, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, no, it wreaked havoc on my social life like a monster would. I worked on that piece for like 10 months. When I started it, I'm like, oh, this will be a fun thing to do for the 15th anniversary. And I started in like February of last year, and the 15th anniversary wasn't going to be till like September. Uh-huh. Like, surely this will be done before then. And then it just wasn't. Like, that came and it came and went. And then I didn't actually finish it until like December 31st of 2019. So like, I got to get this done before the end of the year for it to still count, you know?
Like, it's kind of nice when you have like that hard marker to be like, it's got to be done by now.
I mean, it's nice, but it's also like, shit, it's the holidays. I gotta but I gotta get this fucker done. Like,
just parents calling from the other room.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it was legitimately ready. Like that.
Oh,
it was
no.
Like, hey, it's Christmas. Oh, wait, I gotta finish this thing. Like, like, let's do presents, and I've got to go back to my office.
So you've been doing, like, a lot of freelance work recently. How do you find that, like, work-life balance?
Balance is a funny word because it very much leans one way more than the other. Mm-hmm. Like, freelance for me, I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where, like, all the projects I work on are, like, stuff that interests me. So it's sort of just, like, this is just what I'm doing. It's not so much work most of the time. It's just, like, this is, like, fun. I get to paint some dragons for somebody, right? I was going to paint dragons anyway. Like, so, yeah, it's just, like, I wake up and I work on stuff and then I go to sleep when I'm tired.
Well, hey, it sounds like you found the perfect fit for what you love and what you do. So there are a lot of artists out there right now who are trying to find similar paths to create around things that they love and make, like, a living off of it. Mm-hmm. What sort of, like, tips would you have for people trying to do that?
I mean, just, like, draw stuff that interests you, but, like, don't just draw, get, like, really into it, you know, like, yeah, it, like, for me, you know, obviously monsters and anatomy and stuff is, like, what, like, really drives me, and so I can only speak to my own experience, but, like, the more time I started investing into stuff that, like, really interests me, because in art school I wanted to, like, draw, you know, human characters, but, like, I liked them, but, like, I don't know. They just never, like, clicked with me in the same way as, like, drawing, like, a T-Rex or a dragon does. So, like, once I sort of, like, became true to my own interests, it's just everything started to open up for me. Like, people can see that, like, passion in your work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, like, you know, if you are drawing stuff that makes you happy and you get really good at it, somebody's going to pay you to do that.
That's excellent. And something that we were talking on earlier this week that I thought was really interesting was the idea of, like, not just theme, but style, and how those kind of intertwine. Mm-hmm. So, like, you might have things that you are passionate to create around, but you also have a lens that you kind of view things through or are able to explore through.
Sure. Yes, I mean, like I mentioned before, like, style is, like, a complicated subject because, like, you know, every teenager, especially, like, teenagers who are into, like, anime and stuff,
they're oh.
Like, they have, like, yeah. Oh, I want to have my style. Or, like, if somebody's, like, kind of drawing eyes like they do, they're like, you're ripping off my style, right? But, like, style is not really something, in my experience, that, like, you seek out to create, except for, like, you know, a specific project. Like, if you're working on, like, trying to make a new TV show, right, and you might, like, design a style just for, like, that to work as shorthand. But, like, for your own personal stuff, it's more just, like the plane that, like, all of your, like, how you see the world is, like, that's informing your decision making. So, like, if you see, like, an animal, like, you are gonna pull out aspects of that animal that somebody else might not. Like, for me, I'm really into, like, drawing, like, teeth, like, big teeth, right? So yeah. I will gravitate not only just to animals that have larger teeth, but, like, I will really, like, sort of spend time painting those because, like, that's just the part of the animal that interests me. So if I'm drawing a crocodile, I might have, like, a much more different take on it than somebody else who doesn't. And, like, that's sort of where I think style is found, is just, like, what, like, the elements that are important to you in the world that you were pulling into your artwork.
Why teeth?
They're spikes.
Hey, that's a great
reason.
I like
spiky forms, like, teeth and spikes and horns and claws, like, all the pointy parts, like, those are the stuff I like.
What creature has the most unique teeth?
Teeth come in homodont and heterodont, which homodont means same shape tooth and heterodont means different shape tooth. So, like, mammals, they're all heterodonts because we have, like, you know, the canines and, like, and the incisors. So basically mammals, like, you know, most mammals have, like, the most unique shapes of teeth, except for, like, whales who just have, like, all, you know, spikes, like a killer whale's just all the same spike just moved up through the mouth.
Part of that is all about the like, what they're consuming, yeah? Like,
yeah.
It's like omnivore versus carnivore.
Well, that's another thing that's
versus
exciting about teeth is, like, the teeth that, you know, the reason they evolved to have that shape is because they are going for a specific type of food, right? And that in, like, even if you're just drawing the one single creature, like, without an environment, without anything, you can, like, glean what it does in its life just through its teeth.
So something that you worked on recently was the Detective Pikachu movie. And those are fantastical creatures that don't really exist. So were you able to apply that same sort of, like, what was its natural habitat, what's its environment, into that sort of thing? So
I tried. Like, you know, with Pokemon, like, you still have to be, like, you know, especially on that project, you had to be, like, really true to, like, you know, like, the spirit of, like, the cartoon design.
Yeah.
But, you know, in any case, like, I still tried to, like, bring, like, that knowledge base into them. Like, you know, Charizard is obviously, like, you know, he's not an herbivore, right? Like,
yeah.
That thing is eating meat. So I tried
charred to, meat.
Yes, yeah. You know, he's the only animal that cooks his food before he eats. but, like, So I wanted to make sure that I brought all of that sort of, you know, just like foundational, like anatomical knowledge to make them feel more grounded and real. Because even if people don't know that's why teeth look the way they do, like, you know, you don't really understand it, but your brain does, you know, like you're figuring it out like behind the scenes. Like, you know, if you see something, like if something has like big sharp teeth and it's eating plants, you're like, something's wrong here. I don't know why, but something's weird.
Yeah, it's a very ineffective way to go about eating a plant with those teeth.
Well, I remember PETA did something like, it's like 10 years ago, they're like, actually, T-Rex was a plant eater because it had knives to cut up the vegetation in its mouth. Like, that's not how that works.
Yeah. What do you think is the furthest, like, you've extrapolated out, like, facts to apply to a drawing? Creature within a drawing. Like, what's the furthest you've gone out?
I mean, for my own, like some of my personal creature stuff, I was like trying to get into this idea. Like, it's really easy for creature designers to be like, hey, you know, I want to like create like a bat dragon or something, right?
Yeah.
And like, I'm going to look at a bat and I'm going to pull like the wing shape and I'm going to pull the wing shape exactly as it is and move it onto the dragon. But something I was trying to play with is what I call advanced creature design, where it's like instead of pulling.
That was in quotes for those of you listening.
Sorry. quotation mark finger. So one of the things I was trying to mess around with is like using non-traditional anatomical sources. I was working on like a sea dragon, but instead of like just making it look like a shark or a fish or something, I used like a shark skull for the torso shape. And I was trying to play with these ideas of like I was using like jawbone shapes for like, you know, calf muscles. And like that was, I haven't like done a finished illustration with any of this stuff yet, but like it's something I've been like working on in the background to see how far I can push using an anatomical base, but like in a non-traditional method.
That's cool. That's cool. It's really neat seeing, like, I've always enjoyed creature design and like concept art as a general thing, because you get to really play around with things that aren't necessarily where, like, you know, it's like, okay, here's this, we want this art. Okay, but this is art you get to play with. You get to use that imagination. It kind of taps into some of that, like, childish, like, creativity.
Well, yeah, it's like, that's so fun about creatures, because, like, there's not really rules, you know, like with people, like, if you get one nostril too big, you're like, shit, like, that doesn't look like a person. Like, they've got a deformity now. And, like, you know, like, that's why, like, drawing attractive people is, like, one of the hardest things you can do, because, like, there's such a finite amount of, like, wiggle room there before it becomes unappealing to people. But with monsters, man, like, you know, go to town. Like,
yeah, you know, you only draw crazy. Attractive monsters.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try.
Awesome, man. So I want to talk a little bit about, like, right now you're doing the freelance thing and have decided to take that from being a studio to doing that. So what kind of inspired that decision?
Honestly, man, like, doing studio work, like, it's really exciting because, like, you know, you get to work on big properties, you know, big projects, and the pay is usually much better. But also, like, none of it's yours. Like, you don't get to take anything home, really. And even after, like, project gets canceled, like, if something you're working on gets canceled, you've been working on for like a year or whatever, it's just like, well, I guess that's it. Like, you know, you're done. You don't get any of that stuff back. Like, it's just, it's like throwing really good ideas into a void that may never come out. And I think that's just like really unsatisfying for, like, for me as a creator.
Yeah, that could be super draining.
Yeah, well, it's draining, and it's just like, it just sucks to, like, you know, like, you're working on something, you're like, this is the coolest idea I've ever had. This is amazing. No one gets to see it. Like,
oh, been there. Like, the collective art audience just had like a shudder of like recognition.
Yeah. So for me, I wanted to like put myself in a position where I can have more time to work on stuff that like I get to own and get to like, you know, reap the rewards from later. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to like keep throwing stuff into a hole that nobody gets to enjoy.
Yeah, so as you move forward, what sort of things, if you don't mind sharing, are you looking at, like, starting to go into?
I mean, so, like, for the longest time, I've wanted to, like, sort of develop, like, a fantasy world of, like, you know, with my own, like, you know, world design for all these different animals, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to make, like an ecology for, like, dragons. And so one thing I've been, like, playing with the idea is, like developing like a dragon-based video game. Because mm-hmm. Like, there's a market for that. Like, people want to be able to play as a dragon in video games, and like all we have is Spyro, which doesn't really scratch that itch. But like, you know, I think it'd just be super fun to like have a game where you get to like, just fly around as dragons and like hang out with your friends or whatever. And I thought, you know, hey, I'm pretty good at drawing dragons. Maybe I should do it.
Yeah, I don't even think in the Dragonheart video game you got to be the dragon.
Yeah, no, like in the Jurassic Park games, you never get to be the dinosaurs, right?
It's
like,
yeah.
I don't understand the video game space. Like, you have unlimited creativity, unlimited world capabilities, and you're like, great, now you're just going to play another guy in New York City. Like,
yeah, the best you got was, like, Primal Rage.
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay, now I'm all these, like, yeah, dinosaurs that are fighting and like, King Kong.
I don't know who owns the Primal Rage license, but if you guys are going to do a reboot, like, hit me up. I will draw your monsters.
Yeah. If you know Primal Rage's people, get them in touch with our people so that we can get them in touch with RJ. Because, like, I'd play that. I'd play that again.
Yeah.
I think I had that on, was it on the 64 or Super NES?
I think it must have been Super Nintendo. And I only ever played it in like.
Sir, just telling the Super Nintendo. Thank you. I remember they had like the fatalities in it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
well,
that was
good. How they did the creature designs for that, right?
How did they do that?
They were like not claymation, but stop motion models.
Yeah.
So like Harryhausen's type stuff, and then just like, you know, took like a photo and then like made that like a frame for the sprite. Like, that was really cool.
That's amazing. That whole period of gaming had like a lot of that sort of influence. Because even like the early Mortal Kombat's had like more video
just
stuff.
Based off of people. And then like Donkey Kong Country was really cool because like they did like high resolution for the time renders of like Donkey Kong and his friends. And like then they would like save each one of those out as a frame and convert it to a sprite. So like that game looked like a 3D game even though it was all still 2D.
Yeah, I had no idea that that's how that happened, but it definitely makes sense because you think of like the lighting on them even.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just uncanny at the
time.
Yeah,
no, I can't imagine. I was like 3, but like.
I'm old. I remember, like, whenever I think of Donkey Kong Country, like, lots of nostalgia, lots of warm memories. But, like, I always think of this one minecart level where they put that, like, bunch of bananas, like, after the
so
gap.
I've never played it, but I have heard tell, and I've seen people struggle with that.
When you try to 100%, it is not a fun time. Yeah. Like, lots of just Donkey Kong falling off the map shatters you a bit. Makes you into the cold, hard person that you see before you. Let's talk about Natural History Museum. Okay, so that was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced, and I'm really happy I was part of the team that got to go there with you.
I'm also happy I was part of the team.
But so to give a little heads up, we got to go to the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles. Many thanks, Sally. And we got to be there before anyone else was there. It was like night at the museum territory.
Yeah.
With us and a bunch of like amazing dinosaur installations.
Yeah, and lots of cameras, you know, like lots of lights.
Lots of cameras, yeah. Lots of lights.
No, like that was super cool to just like be in the museum when there's like no one there. Like, you know, like you only get to dream about that, about doing something like that. Like for the longest time, I just wanted to like hit up like somebody who owns a museum and be like, hey, can I just like spend the night? Like,
yeah. Just you and a security guard.
Yeah, right.
I think that could be like a really good like buddy film too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they made that movie. It's called Night at the Museum.
But tell us a little bit about your experience on that shoot.
Sure, yeah. You know, I got to be interviewed and answer questions, you know, not wholly dissimilar from this.
Yeah, well, hey, we got one thing and we're really good at it.
Yeah. But no, I got to just like, you know, chill in the dinosaur room and then got to meet Nate Smith, their associate curator of paleontology, which was, you know, really cool. Like, I love meeting paleontologists because, like, you know, you always hear, like, the word paleontologist and they sound like a superhero.
Yeah.
And then you meet them, they're just like a dude. Like, you know, they're just like a nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Dr. Ellie Sadler.
Yeah.
Like, Alan Grant. The names are up there.
Yeah. Right?
Nate Smith.
Yeah.
All superhero names. But tell me a little bit about that, because I had to leave right before you got entrance to that floor. And that's like an exclusive floor that like no one gets to go to.
Yeah. So he took us up and showed us like the dinosaur, like, you know, fossil preparation labs. And so we got to see like, you know, actual like fossil material getting worked on where, you know, they use like a little tiny Dremel bit and just have to dig out something like 8 feet long and just takes them like years.
I'm so jealous. Like, much like yourself, I wanted to be a paleontologist for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I found out you were just writing grants, and I was very much not into that.
Yeah.
But you getting to do that is so cool. Like, yeah. Okay, so what was your favorite dinosaur growing up?
I mean, it's the same one that I'm still is my favorite. It's the T-Rex. Like, you know, I love T-Rex. It's not just my favorite dinosaur. It's my favorite animal, period.
That's an excellent choice. I'm, like, way too fickle. I read that, like, popularity train. So I was doing like Parasaurolophus for a while, but then it got too popular. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to do like Pachycephalosaurus. Then that made it into the movies. Yeah. Couldn't really do that anymore. And then I think now I'm kind of settled on like Allosaurus. Like I love it. I love the three claws, a little bit nimble. And
well, they just came out, a new scientific paper just came out describing a new species of Allosaurus.
What?
Yeah. It's so I thought it's because like the way scientific names work, for those that don't know, is like you have a genus name, which is the first part, that's capitalized, and then you have the species name. So like Tyrannosaurus Rex. Tyrannosaurus is the genus, Rex is the species. You know, humans are Homo sapiens. Homo is the genus, sapiens is the species.
Right.
Like there's Homo Neanderthalus, which is like, you know, the Neanderthals, right? So for Allosaurus, the new one that just came out is Jim Madsenai. But I thought it was Jim Madsen. but it's named after a paleontologist guy named Jim Madsen. They're just like, well, just throw that name on there. Like,
and make it Latin.
Yeah, right? Yeah, they do that. Like, it's one of my weird like pet peeves with dinosaur names is they're just like, I just stick somebody's name on it. Like, that'll be the new species.
What makes this one different than...
So it's got like a bigger nasal passage. And it has like less... It's hard to describe with audio, but its jugal is less pronounced, which is sort of like a cheekbone.
Gotcha. This part.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's not quite, it doesn't have like, Allosaurus has like this really characteristic frown, basically, and this one doesn't have that.
Awesome. This is the happy Allosaurus. I'm in. Yeah. I'm now Allosaurus Madsenai.
Jim Madsenai.
Jim Madsenai, yeah. Fan number one.
Yeah.
Other than Jim Madsen, who is probably actually fan number one.
Probably, yeah.
But it was named after him, I hope. What if he really hated
Honestly, I'm not actually sure who that guy is. I didn't actually read enough of the publication to figure that part out. But
apparently he's a football player.
Yeah, but so I hope I'm not like making a total fool of myself right now.
Over our artist team is saying you also got to like hold a T-Rex.
Yes, that's
tooth.
True. Yeah.
Tying together two of your favorite things, teeth and a T-Rex.
Yes, yeah. No, I mean, that's why I like the T-Rex is the teeth. Like, but yeah, then I got to like hold a real fossil material of the T-Rex tooth, which, you know, for those that don't know, it's like, you know, 10 or 12 inches long. Like most of that's root, but it's still, that's a lot of tooth. Like,
yeah.
And it's, there's something like so interesting about like real fossil material because most like mounts, it's like a skeleton mount in a museum, most of the time those are not real fossil material. Those are like casts made of like plaster or resin or just plastic. But like seeing the real fossil material, it's like so much more detailed because, you know, it's like it's the difference between like SD and HD. There's just that like extra little bit of clarity in there. It's just, it's like really cool to see in person.
Oh, I'm so envious that I had to leave. But as I left, like three like tour groups of children came in and I was like, I'm out.
Like, it started getting very noisy very quickly.
Like, my timing was impeccable. I was just like, bye. Cool. So I want to go into now, go back to Pokemon. Because like we've got a Pokemon club here at the office basically that plays Pokemon Go because we love it. And quotes love it. One person is really a bully and just makes us play. But what I want to do is I want to play a little game real quick. And we're going to do the very Pokemon trope of what Pokemon is this? Now, those of you listening at home, this is also on video on YouTube. You can watch it. But we'll do our best to describe it. So if you go to DeviantArt on YouTube, you can watch this whole thing. You can watch all the other podcasts too, which is great. Highly recommend. But we're going to do our best to describe. So this one, which is obviously Pikachu, we would say like, okay.
Well, it's not obvious to the listeners.
The listeners are playing the hardest game. Yeah. Yeah, let's play that at home. If you're listening, try and guess what it is based on the description.
Yeah.
We'll take a little pause before we answer. But this one, we would be like, it has pointy oblongish ears and a zigzag tail.
Yeah.
I tried my best to find the official art for each. I think I did.
Okay.
But we'll see. Okay, so that one. And then on the back, yeah, it is Pikachu reveal. Yeah. Whoa!
Who would have thought that one?
You guys, these were made professionally. For those of you listening, they're giant, shiny placards, very gorgeous.
Yeah, they're totally not just like 8.5 by 11 printouts.
Yep, not at all. Not stapled at Josh's desk. Right, so let's go for our first one.
All right, so it looks like there's an oblong football on top of a circle with what appears to be four legs and an oblong football-shaped tail. And if I had to guess, I would say that's Mudkip.
Okay. Let's see. you at home, you can think over those things. Oblong, oblong, oblong football. Is it Mudkip? It is Mudkip. Yeah. All right. The next one.
So this one appears to have a bow on its head and a little tail and a hand that notably has five fingers, which is unusual for Pokemon.
Oh.
And it has a round head with little triangular-ish ears. And if I had to guess, I would say that's Grookey.
And?
Yes,
looks it like is I'm right. Grookey. We've done it. You guys, this is escalating quickly. Hope you're ready. Next one's a bit of a challenge.
All right. Oh, boy. well, it's a box that's missing one of its corners.
Yes.
And I don't think Missy No is a legitimate Pokemon. The only other square box Pokemon I can think of is Charjabug.
Okay, let's see what it is. This is Pokemon Red.
Okay, there we go. I'm a fool.
All right, so very difficult. All right, next one.
Well, this one should be very easy. So it's got a serpentine body with Godzilla-like fins down its back and whiskers, and it terminates in a fishtail, and it's very clearly Gyarados.
Okay. Yep, Gyarados. Nice. All right, next one.
Oh, boy. Is it Pokemon Blue?
This one is Pokemon Silver.
Oh, man.
Very close.
Again.
All right, next.
Oh, no. Is this Pokemon Sword and or Shield?
So this one... longer rectangle, rounded corners. Guess is Pokemon Sword and or Shield. If it was both, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
It is Shield.
Okay, well, there we go. Okay. I got sort of there.
And this one, which I believe is our final challenge piece.
Okay.
Because I know that you only played the main Pokemon games.
I think I might have played this one. Unless, okay. So it's got the shape and silhouette of what's almost certainly an N64 cartridge.
Okay.
And then there's only Pokemon Stadium 1 and 2 and Hey You Pikachu. So it's probably Hey You Pikachu.
Oh. Pokemon Snap.
Oh, man, that's actually the one that I like the best. How am I this foolish?
Well, very assertive play to go straight with Pokemon Blue.
Like, yeah.
All right, so more of this week. You just completed an amazing piece for the Artist in Residency program, which we just started. You are our first artist. Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, happy to be here.
It's an amazing program. You can find more about it on deviantart.com/team. But we've had you in all week, and you've been working on this piece that is just bonkers, is the term I learned in art history class.
Yes, it's a very clinical term.
Yeah, it's right up there with adding psi at the end.
Yeah.
Bonkers psi is the Latin. But tell us a little bit about what it was like creating that piece and your thought process that went into it.
Well, the thought process was I have 3 days to finish this, so I should do something that's like maybe a bit more conservative in like scope. And so my decision instead was to paint two dragons and a school of fish, which, you know, not super conservative as it turns out. And I had to like scramble and work my ass off to like get that finished. But I think it came out pretty well. It's based on the word kindred. Which,
yeah, that's our theme for 2020 is kindred. Yeah.
Yeah. So this kindred relationship between two dragons that both like to eat squid.
Which is fun. I like seeing them because the one, the main one, the more whalish one, is so massive.
Mm-hmm.
And you do such a good job of like presenting the scale with the one next to it.
Yeah. Well, like that was the idea. I wanted to like, you know, to be a little bit more serious with it. Like, is like I wanted to present like the familial relationship between like two like very disparate species, but like they both like come from like the same ancestry. You know, it's like, hey, you know, you're not actually like, you know, you're not like my cousin, you're not like my real like, you know, brother or whatever, but like, you know, we're both like part of the same ecosystem. You know, it's like us with like, you know, chimpanzees. Like, you know, you can't like, you know, bring a chimpanzee and let it live in your house, but it's, you know, it's like you understand that there's like a familial relationship between you two. You're both part of like, you know, this world and this ecosystem.
It is a stunning piece. Like,
thank you.
Getting to watch you finish it, we did a live stream, which you can also find. But like, there was so much detail. Like, just watching you go in, like scale by scale.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how to really present it because my art is like, okay, I grab a Sharpie, I go to town for like a maximum of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I'm like,
that
art.
Like, you know.
But your stuff is you get to go in and you really develop these forms through that detail.
I try, yeah.
But like there's an actual like three-dimensional flow to it that is so spectacular to get to see kind of emerge as you make scale forms.
Especially with scales. Scales are so satisfying to me. Like for some reason they just click with me. I get them better than like any other integument surface. But like the fun thing about scales is you can really use them to inform like just the forms. Like, you know, because you can almost treat them like, you know, like a 3D grid. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you're just like building them around the shape. So you really get to like, you know, push like the depth of the object, and also scales are cool looking.
Scales are cool looking. You had some death cast that you brought in for reference.
So for those that don't know what a death cast is, because I didn't know what a death cast was until like a year and a half ago, it's when like you take like a dead animal and then you make like a casting from it, and then, you know, it's like produced in like resin or fiberglass, and you know, it's got like perfect one-to-one detail with the actual real animal. So like they're the best reference you can have and hold in your hand. Outside of taxidermy, which smell bad. So I love getting death casts, and I wish more people were making them, because like I just would buy them all.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool because you had like a monitor lizard, yeah? Mm-hmm.
I had two monitor lizards, a crocodile monitor, a savannah monitor, and then I also had a little baby alligator head.
Those were cool. Like, reference materials are just so amazing when you get to like hold them that close.
Yeah.
And you do get to see those warps, and we get those Allosaurus cheekbones, all the different forms.
No, it's great. It's like, man, boy, those are helpful. Like, it was like when I was working at Ubisoft, I was like, well, I'm going to be painting something. I should use one of these reference things I have, right? And I was just like walking down the street with like a 3-foot alligator under my arm. Like,
so you're also definitely a proponent for using references.
Yeah, big like, time.
There's a school of thought that is around that is like, you have to do it from the mind.
Yeah, anybody who says that is like, they're either being an asshole or they have a brain that works like most people's doesn't. Like, I don't know how people, like, if they are legitimately that good and not using references, then they just have like a photographic memory that I can't fathom like how to have that. So I surround myself with as much reference as possible to make sure that like it's always easier to like if you run into a problem and you're like, I don't know how to paint this, instead of just like throwing your head against the wall and like trying to paint it, like you're just, you know, keep going over and over and over and it still doesn't look right to you, just go look up what it looks like and you'll be done. Like, it's great.
Smart words. And people will be able to find this piece on your profile.
That's right.
And so you can look it up, deviantart.com/arvalis, ARVALIS.
That's right.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
You guys, spelling is hard.
Yeah, or just Google RJ Palmer and it should show up too.
There we go. But yeah, it was cool being able to like see that process, because like I think I came in on Monday and we had like a little bit of like underlying, like kind of a layout. I think where it got ahead of you was you said school of fish as one object.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should say one giant whale creature, one flying creature, a couple of squids. Roughly 200 fish.
Yeah. No, it's like, so I did a book project a few years back where I painted like a bunch of like prehistoric sea life, and I painted School of Fish for that for the first time, and I'm like, oh, I think I have a pretty good workflow for this. This isn't too bad. And it's like, well, you know, I maybe shouldn't have been quite so confident.
I mean, it looks great, but yeah. I definitely saw you working when I left a couple days. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, okay, sleep, please. Yeah. We got to take care of you. You doing any cons this year that people should catch
up? Yeah. So the first one I've got is Fanime Memorial Day weekend at the end of May up in San Jose. And like, I really love that show because that's the show I grew up with. Like, that's like my local show. So I've been going there since I was like 15, and then I started selling there. That was the first place I started selling at a convention.
What was that like? Like your first convention to sell at?
It was hectic because like that was like right after I did like the first batch of realistic Pokemon. So like it was like the height of like my popularity at that point. I just like, didn't know what to do with it. Like I made up like an art book, but I only made 5 copies, and like maybe people want these or like $50. Like, I don't know. And then they sold out like in an hour. I was like, oh man, I was like woefully underprepared for this. And like my whole convention setup was just like some white PVC pipes with like a banner. It looked like real trashy.
Did you use like the C clamps and then stick the PVC over
it? I did that.
We've all been there. Oh my God.
So like that was a whole learning experience, but like, you know, I made more money than I had ever in my whole life. It's like, you know, what have I done? Like, this is amazing. And then so like from there, I started expanding out into different conventions. Like basically I've only like done like California shows with the exception of like a Salt Lake City one. But yeah, California is great because, like, you know, there's so many nerds here that want to buy Pokemon stuff and, like, you know, just like buy cool shit. So yeah, I've just been like doing conventions and like learning as I go. And now, like, last year I did my best shows ever.
Nice. And so the first one you're doing is San Jose. After that, what you got next?
After that, I have Anime Expo, which is in July.
That's a huge one.
It's, yeah, it's the biggest anime show in the country.
That was my first con.
Whoa,
was
okay.
Anime Expo.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was a while ago, huh?
It was a long time ago.
Like in the 40s?
Yeah, it was when anime was still a thing. Like, you haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
It was Naruto and Bleach and Speed Racer.
Yeah. No, I love Anime Expo just because the attendance is massive. And you get to, like, since it is the biggest show in the country, you get to see, like, all the best convention artists from all across, like, the country. And just, like, you know, the people fly in from, like, all over to, like, work that show. So, like, it's like, the gold standard for, like, anime shows. And you, like, get to make friends with all these people. Like, oh, I've seen your work. Like, you know, will you buy my thing? Like, yeah.
It's by far my favorite artist alley.
Well, it's the biggest artist alley in the country.
Yeah, like, it's... You walk through and you see everything.
Yeah.
You've got perler beads people. Yeah. You've got like
the
plushies.
Perler beads people. Like they're great, but it's weird that like they show up at these huge shows. They feel like so like craft fair, you know?
Yeah, but they like some of the stuff they create, like there's some that are like mounted on like beautiful wood.
Yeah, and then they have like the shadow box ones, which are really cool.
Yeah, like but Anime Expo, you get every craft, every possible thing. So it's like really cool. And it's like you said, it's the biggest one. It's monstrous.
Yeah.
It's like three quarters of the con.
I think there's like it's like 700 or 800 artists there. It's just like insane.
Back in the day, when they were still trying to fill it before like it really hit that fever pitch of anime, I remember we booked it for a sketch comedy group and because it was cheap. And we were like, how do we get a booth as a sketch comedy group? And they're like, well, you have to do art. I was like, oh, I can do art. So we brought a ream of paper and would just draw stuff for free, whatever people
asked.
That's
hilarious.
And our whole bit was like, okay, as long as you are disappointed in it, like we got to take a picture of you. Mm-hmm. But please take our postcard for our sketch comedy.
Yeah.
And they would come up and we didn't know anime that well. We had watched like the big ones, but Anime Expo is so great because everyone loves it so much.
Yeah.
They have all the really detailed stuff. So they come up and they'd be like, can you draw this character? And I'm like, I don't know who that is. But
This is before smartphones, right?
This is before smartphones, yes. This is roughly around the time of like carrier pigeons.
Okay.
So we were lucky at best. So we'd have them describe it and we'd draw it. And it would just be the worst. Yeah. you as someone who can take something that you haven't really seen physically and make it into something gorgeous.
Well, yeah, but if it's an anime character, man, I'm going to, like, do a shit job. It's like, man, no, they have more bangs than that. I'm sorry, there's only so much room.
Yeah, the 90% of this page are bangs.
Yeah.
But it was a blast, though, because, like, we got to see all that stuff and, like, really just become a part of that community. And what was crazy is, like, the friendships that you make at cons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the table next to us that year were the guys that made Owlboy.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, I'm still really good friends with, like, those guys.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
It was, like, a four-person team that made that game.
Yeah.
And they were just sitting with us all week. And they were like, I can't believe you drew Spider-Man looking like that. It's like, we need to do it.
Yeah.
But, like, cons are so great for making friends. Like, DeviantArt's great for making friends as well. But, like... cons, you get that in-person stuff too.
Well, it's, you know, because like everybody, you know, has had a DeviantArt, like, you know, as an artist at one point in their career, right? So like, you know, I recognize all these people from like, you know, just their art, like walking through. I was like, oh yeah, that guy. Oh wait, I want to actually meet that one. You know,
people that you've had conversations with like online before, you get to meet in person. And there's kind of that cool time too before the con kicks off, where it's just exhibitors and you're like,
I love that like magic hour. It's just like, well, it's only going to take us 15 minutes to set up. I guess we may just wander around. Because you always have to get there early to like hope that you get parking, you know?
Yeah. And now, Anime Expo, parking in the line to get in.
Yeah. No, like that's honestly just getting like an exhibitor badge is worth it to skip the line alone.
Yeah. If you guys thought Tough Mudder was hard, try a line at Anime Expo. It's the new extreme. Adrenaline junkies just waiting in line.
Yeah. Sleep junkies more like.
On DA, like a lot of people really like love Pokemon.
Yeah. I've noticed.
I've seen several pieces, at least five. And what's it like being someone that is held in such high regard for?
I mean, it's great. Like, obviously, that's the nice answer. But also, you know, it's a little bit daunting, especially if you have a different interpretation of a Pokemon than, like, somebody, like, you know, is keen on. Like, famously, like, my Gengar, which I designed as, like, bats. Uh-huh. But, like, people are like, it's not a bat. It's a ghost. Like, what? Okay, show me what a ghost looks like, bud. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that information.
There are less fossils of ghosts. This is a scientific fact. Yes. Less ghost fossils than any other fossil.
Yeah.
Tied with alien fossils. With Sasquatch fossils.
Yeah, but I'm on the hunt for those ones. Only in the woods. But the so like Pokemon stuff for me, like, you know, I'm so passionate about it. But like so is everyone else. So like everybody sort of has like their own ideas and interpretations. And for some reason I've lucked out that like my interpretations of them, like, people seem to like. And like not just like a small group of people, but a lot of people. And so that's been good for my career.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, being able to find that balance, I think, between the like, you face such a challenge of, like, balancing cartoon in the very fantastical and, like, the most whimsical sense of that word with the science.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real hard thing to find that slider on.
Well, and for me, like, you know, the realism, like, sort of, like, it's not so much necessarily that these animals exist in our world. It's more like taking the idea of like these Pokemon monsters could have evolved in our world. Like they don't, they obviously don't exist because they can't exist. But like the idea of like bringing them into our world space is really fascinating. So like I look at like real world analogs to like these shapes and like these forms and try and figure out like sort of like a puzzle piece. Like it's like I'm going to pull from that animal, and then I'm going to assemble them into a Pokemon shape.
Sure. Tell us like an exact example of that.
Sure. So like for like my Charizard one, Charizard's Japanese name is Lizardon. So he's like very, like he's just a dragon, but he's also like clearly like supposed to have some like reptilian qualities. So for me, I wanted to pull from like some of my favorite reptilians, like Komodo dragons and Monitor lizards, as well as like crocodilians, with a little bit of like pterosaurs for the wings. So like especially for the face, I pulled from, there's a extinct crocodilian called Caprosuchus, which has like really big, like really big fangs on like on parts of his mouth, and then also like little hornlets on the back of its head. So I sort of mashed that up with the shapes of a Komodo dragon mouth, and I had found like a really pleasing like in between for me, and that people seem to like it. So like I guess it was successful.
Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head for that.
Yeah,
I think really interesting is you were able to take that passion and that hobby and actually turn it into something like really huge with Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, well, so that was quite a shock. Like, you know, because I was just like, you know, trucking along, drawing my Pokemon, and then like I get this phone call from somebody who says they're from Legendary Pictures. And I'm like, okay, I've heard of you guys. And they're like, do you want to work on something? I'm thinking like, you know, maybe Godzilla. I don't know what they're doing. And then I like, they're like, hey, you want to work on a live action Pokemon movie? And, you know, I thought this was, like, it's too good to be true, right? It's got to be a scam.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, can you start Monday? And this was a Tuesday, so I was like, oh, no. I was living in, like, Northern California, and they're like, you know, we're in Burbank. You want this job? I'm like, okay, I guess. And I, like, loaded up my computer and, like, all my shit and, like, moved down over a weekend.
They really know how to give you the time to prep.
Yeah, no, it's like, you know, video games, stuff moves, like, at a snail's pace. Movies, it's, like, crazy. Like,
yeah. What was it like being in that sort of like movie situation?
Oh man, it was like, it was the first movie I like worked on. It was actually like the first real like, you know, in-house job I had.
Mm-hmm.
So like it was this learning experience and like getting to like hang out with these, you know, these big name concept artists who had like, you know, worked on like dozens of movies, and like they had all these tips and tricks. And like, oh man, that's really helpful. I didn't know you could do that in Photoshop. Like
what was something that you learned?
One of the most beneficial things, and it seems like super obvious, and maybe everybody already knows this, but like you can turn off a bunch of layers or turn on a bunch of layers by clicking and then dragging over the eye icon, like drag down or drag up.
I had no idea you could.
Right? I didn't know that you could do that either. I would just like go and click each one off individually. It was insane.
No one in this room knew that. So I'm going to try that when we get out of here. That's crazy. So
yeah.
Like no more just like click, click, click.
Yeah. No, you just click and drag and you get them all turned off. Like that changed so much for me. And it's like those little dumb tricks that you never – like know that exist until you see somebody else in the office like working. They're just like, oh yeah, you can do this. I'm like, what? Like that changes everything.
At this point in time, like there are probably like days of my lives that have been spent just turning on and off layers.
No, it's
one
the same
one.
For me. Like now, like you know, if ever I think like, hey, is there a better solution to this? I go looking because usually there is.
What other things did you get at working from a studio?
So just like getting to work under the production designer was Nigel Phelps, and he's like this longtime production designer, worked on a bunch of movies. And that was like this like really great sort of like master class experience for me, because like he would come in and like he's the type that like stands over your shoulder and like gives you all these directions. It's like, that's wonderful, because I didn't know that shit. Like I had never really done much like environment stuff before that, and like they shanghaied me into doing like some environments for the movie. And like you know, like the big like balloon parade scene stuff, like I was doing concept art for that, and I was like, I'd never done this before. And he's like, it's fine, you're doing a good job, like just change that. It's like, whoa, that looks good. Like,
yeah, and it's got to be like such a confidence boost too to be like in that position where
Well, and, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like the dream job, you know. You just like in 2012 I was just sitting there drawing some like silly, you know, realistic Pokemon. I was like, never thought in a million years I'd be like doing that professionally.
What was the first Pokemon you did realistically?
It was Garchomp. And it's because I was supposed to be working on some card game illustration that I was just like tapped out on. And I was like, I'm going to draw a shark dinosaur. And then it turned into Garchomp. And it's like, this is okay. And then I posted it and people are like, oh, holy shit. Like, this is really cool. It's like, okay, I guess I'll do more.
That's awesome. All right. Let's wrap it up. We've been in this room for a minute. You guys have been listening for a minute. Thank you for listening. And what sort of things can people look forward to you coming this year?
This year, conventions, like we talked about.
Yeah.
Just trying to do more personal stuff. I want to try and get like this dragon game idea off the ground. I just want to draw more stuff that's fun for me.
And I have to ask you, because everyone is asking you, and now they've got you one-on-one, this is just like how you were able to take aside our people here at DeviantArt all week. When can we see a book 3 of Realistic Pokemon?
That's another thing I'm working on this year. the official answer is sometime in the future.
Sometime in the future, yeah. TM.
Yes. But, you know, with the new Sword and Shield expansion stuff coming out, more returning Pokemon, like, you know, for the first time in a while, I'm feeling like really jazzed up about the brand. Like, I really want to do more Pokemon stuff.
Nice.
So definitely expect more of that coming this year.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being our first artist in residence.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, thanks for you.
Yeah. Well, hey. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for watching, guys. Make sure to check out everything in the links below. Follow, subscribe, like, all of those things so that we can do more stuff. Make sure to get a rating on iTunes and Apple Podcasts so that we go up and we can do more of this content in the future. And thank you so much. Bye.